Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Beth Krulwich, and I represent Dr. Steven Nadler in this matter. This case deals with the issue of under what circumstances is it appropriate to disqualify an attorney in a present case for having represented, having a former client who has some interest that may be adverse in the current case.
Ms. Krulwich, let me, if I may, ask at the outset, just as a matter of curiosity, assuming that Mr. Cummins, I believe, was properly disqualified, wouldn't his firm also be disqualified in this case?
Not necessarily, Judge. The issue of whether an entire firm is the disqualification is imputed to the entire firm needs to be raised and litigated. The case law does not necessarily require an entire firm to be disqualified just because one lawyer is disqualified.
This was a partnership, was it not?
It was, and I'll tell you the other issue is, Judge, that the issue in this case is only the propriety of the disqualification. There are many cases where, for instance, the district attorney's office gets disqualified. You can bring the disqualified law firm or lawyer has to have a vehicle within which to mount an appeal. So when the issue in this case, you know, Mr. Cummins got off the case and Pam Thomas, who is actually Dr. Nadler's wife, ended up representing him in the trial. Our firm had no involvement in the trial on the merits. We are simply bringing this appeal to address the very narrow issue of whether the disqualification was proper and really whether the award of attorney's fees was proper.
I recognize that question wasn't raised by opposing counsel. It was just a matter of curiosity. So
yeah, I think we're on firm ground for doing this, and it was never raised formally. And I think the reason, and there were some discussions between counsel, and I pointed out to them that there has to be a vehicle for an attorney that was disqualified to appeal that question. And since we didn't raise anything else, I believe we're on solid ground with that.
But counsel, you're not here representing Mr. Cummins.
I'm here representing Dr. Nadler.
Well, if you've been disqualified from representing him, that you're still representing him. I'm not sure how that comes about.
Well, it's only on the narrow issue of the disqualification. We did not represent him on the merits of the case. And, I mean, you can see in case law, I've never seen the issue specifically raised, but, for instance, if the public defender's office is disqualified, the public defender's office can file, an appeal and question the propriety of the disqualification. The same is true when a district attorney.
Well, there is a substantial difference, wouldn't you agree, between a public defender's office and a district attorney's office, with offices throughout the state of Colorado, and a small partnership in which one of the partners is disqualified. Do you see a difference there?
I see a difference, but not necessarily that's material to whether or not there has to be some mechanism. Otherwise, how would these questions ever get raised?
Well, it isn't a question of whether or not Dr. Nadler can raise these issues. The question is, should your firm be representing him on those issues? Any lawyer could have represented Dr. Nadler on the issue of whether his attorney should have been disqualified. That seems to me that's the question.
I don't see how the reason that we were disqualified had to do with whether it was proper for Mr. Cummins to represent Dr. Nadler on the merits, the underlying merits of the case. We did not raise any of those issues in this appeal. This appeal is strictly on the narrow issue of the propriety of the disqualification. There was never a motion filed to disqualify our entire firm. That was never litigated. We would have litigated it and given, our arguments to the contrary if there had been. But this was allowed to go forward, and I frankly don't see that there's any problem with it. There's no confidential information that I have that's relevant in this appeal at all. I mean, it is strictly whether or not, and really we're questioning whether the trial court basically made an order disqualifying Mr. Cummins without ever having an evidentiary hearing to resolve disputed issues of fact. And that's what I'm raising on this appeal. And really, the biggest issue is whether or not there was a legitimate or at least a rational argument that was set forth against the disqualification, which means that the award of attorney's fees was improper. And that's really the issue here, because obviously the case is over. Dr. Nadler was represented by Pam Thomas at trial. He was he basically won the case because there was a $2,000, you know, Dr. Rama, the Premier Care Physical Therapy, was seeking $250,000 in damages in the underlying case. The judge awarded $2,000, which was basically the interest on the improperly held withheld funds for a period of 4 months. That case is over. It was an appeal. That judgment was paid. So the only issue here is whether or not the attorney's fees that were awarded, because Mr. Cummins opposed the effort to disqualify him, whether there was a justification for awarding attorney's fees. And that's the only reason that the appeal was brought, is because there is still this outstanding attorney's fees issue. Should I go on? I mean, I'm not sure. There never was a motion to disqualify us here.
Oh, so. Please proceed.
Okay. The Supreme Court has been very clear that where an attorney has formally represented a client whose interests may have some adversity to a current client, that does not in and of itself require disqualification of the attorney, that there has to be a relatedness between the two representations. And in this case, the issues in this case could not have been more narrow. The issue in the case was there was $80,000 that was deposited mistakenly in an account that Dr. Nadler had some authority over. And because of a mistrust that had built up, because there was an ending of a business relationship, there was some mistrust, Dr. Nadler took 4 months to give the money back. And the only issue in the underlying case was what the damages were for withholding that money for 4 months. That was the only issue. Now, Premier Care Physical Therapy made the argument that Mr. Cummins had represented entities and Dr. Joe Ramos and all these other matters, and there was absolutely no relatedness between those matters. As was set forth at length in the briefs, Mr. Cummins represented some entities that had to do with a defamation case that was brought against, that somebody else had brought against the entities. There were some issues having to do with rents that were paid. But there was nothing that had to do with the very narrow, narrow issues that were in this conversion case. This was a case where Premier Care Physical Therapy alleged civil theft and conversion based on the wrongful withholding of the $80,000 for 4 months. That was it.
Wasn't there a claim by Dr. Nadler that he was entitled to offset against the funds that he claimed he was owed due to the breakup of the relationship,
initially,
which had to do then with the business of the clinic?
Initially, Dr. Nadler justified his withholding of the funds, saying that he needed to investigate that. However, once the motion to disqualify was filed, the affirmative defenses were all withdrawn. I mean, what Mr. Cummins did was he attempted to eliminate any relatedness by withdrawing the affirmative defenses, and ultimately, and there had been a motion where he sought to add Joe Ramos as a party, he ultimately withdrew that to make it very clean, to show that there was absolutely not going to be any relatedness. And I think, you know, this is a very important point, because the district court judge, for some reason, really became incensed when Mr. Cummins filed a motion to reconsider. And the motion to reconsider was based on the fact that the affirmative defenses had been withdrawn, that the motion to add Dr. Ramos as a party had been withdrawn, that the notice to depose Dr. Ramos had been withdrawn, and the only issue was to be damages, essentially.
Ms. Krulich, I have a question about that. Okay. Do you have any authority for the proposition that you can, after the fact, dismiss affirmative defenses or withdraw pleadings and somehow expunge the conflict?
Yeah, well, I do, in that the Supreme Court has made very clear that the there is an interest in a party being able to maintain counsel of his or her choice. And that where there is some remedy that is less than disqualification, that that remedy should be sought. So it would have been, and really what the district court should have done, first of all, should have had a hearing, because there were hotly contested issues that he said in his order that he was basing it on undisputed facts, but clearly
I don't mean to interrupt your train of thought, but that raises the second question I have, is why should the trial court have conducted an evidentiary hearing when the parties filed affidavits in support of their relative positions?
Because the affidavits, affidavits establish that there were conflicts between what they were saying and what we were saying. Then you have cross-examination. Then you get to hear witnesses and you get to, you know, have questions asked. And that's the only way you can make a credibility determination, to do it on a cold record the way this judge did. And I believe it's in People v. Frisco, or in re Frisco, where the Supreme Court suggests that the issue of whether or not the former representation is related to the current representation is a factually intensive determination. And there's not a requirement of a hearing, but certainly when there are disputed positions, there should be an evidentiary hearing. And I think the judge was wrong to have not conducted that. But, and I forget what question I was answering before that last question. Expunge the conflict.
Withdrawing the affirmative defenses, how does that affect the conflict?
The Supreme Court has indicated that a court should not disqualify counsel of choice when there is a remedy less than that is available. And when counsel for Dr. Nadler said, fine, you know, if you think these cases are related because of the affirmative defenses or whatever, we'll withdraw those, and therefore we eliminate any relatedness between the cases. And the Supreme Court says that when there is a remedy short of disqualification, that remedy should be, that's the remedy that should be done. So the court could have said, fine, Mr. Cummins, you can remain on the case, but I don't want to hear anything other than the issue of damages. I'll reserve my couple of minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, Doug Norberg, registration number 28778. Also present at council table is attorney Lauren Selinger, attorney registration number 39316. Judge Graham, I think you astutely pointed out that one of the issues in this case is the imputed disqualification and the issues related to that. We did raise that issue of the imputed disqualification in our answer brief at page 27. The issue with respect to the imputed disqualification arose in the context of the appeal. I think as you are aware that the appeal was filed solely on behalf of Dr. Nadler. Had Attorney Cummins wished to file an appeal, there is authority that says he would have standing to appeal the trial court's orders in his individual capacity because the sanctions were entered against him. That is not the situation that we have before us. Before us, we have the disqualified law firm, the disqualified attorney, Mr. Cummins, who's being Dr. Nadler now being represented by his law partner. And we firmly believe that their continued representation of Dr. Nadler, particularly on this appeal, is improper, and that the order for disqualification of Attorney Cummins extends to Ms. Krulwich, his partner. Quite tellingly,
but pardon me for interrupting, sure. Counsel. But there's no factual record on this, correct?
Correct. Okay. Correct. So. I think tellingly, Ms. Krulwich concedes that the issue is not really one of disqualification. That issue is largely moot. They don't seek remand. They don't seek a new trial of the underlying case. They contend that they effectively prevailed in the underlying case and that Dr. Nadler was adequately and effectively represented, and in fact won on the position that Attorney Cummins desired that they take in the underlying case. And so the real issue here is whether or not the trial court's orders for sanctions were appropriately entered. If the issue isn't disqualification because that ship has sailed, and the issue becomes one of whether the trial court appropriately entered the sanctions, then the court need only look at the record upon which the trial court entered the order for sanctions. And in doing that, the trial court specifically looked at the conduct of Attorney Cummins following the point in time that Attorney Cummins was disqualified. Procedurally, what happened was Attorney Cummins was disqualified. After the point in time that he was disqualified, he filed additional pleadings with the trial court. He tried to withdraw the affirmative defenses, and he also tried to cancel, I believe, a notice of deposition that he had served for Dr. Ramos in the effort to cure the conflict that he had between these two clients. Ms. Krulwich described Judge Samore as being incensed. Well, part of the reason why he was incensed, and in large part the reason for the sanctions, was that after Attorney Cummins had been disqualified, he continued to take action on behalf of Dr. Nadler, and in doing so, he filed a motion to reconsider, which he made numerous misrepresentations to the trial court. And those representations were patent from the documents that were filed. Quite tellingly, Attorney Cummins claimed that Mile High Medical Group had not changed its name, when in fact, the very buyout agreement that Attorney Cummins had drafted and the very buyout agreement that was being litigated in an arbitration at JAG specifically said that Mile High Medical Group had changed its name to Premier Care Medical Center. Additionally, Attorney Cummins filed some documents from the Secretary of State indicating that Premier Care Medical Centers was a wholly independent, separate entity, when in fact he failed to attach another document from the Secretary of State which showed it was a trade name of Mile High Medical Group. So the issues largely related to the sanctions from Judge Samore were based on Attorney Cummins' conduct and his material misrepresentations to the trial court. So the issue of sanctions is not related or hinged to the disqualification order as Ms. Krulwich would, I think, have the court believe. The issue of sanctions was largely related to the conduct, and that conduct would still be sanctionable under Rule 11 or under 1317.102, regardless of the nature or basis by which that came before the court. And I don't think anyone's going to have any issue with Judge Samore sanctioning somebody who appears before him and makes material misrepresentations to the court. And
pardon me for interrupting, counsel. Would you please address Ms. Krulwich's argument that by the time the case came around for trial, all the potential conflicts had been removed, and therefore the trial court should not have disqualified Mr. Cummins?
Sure. I think that is a fallacy in the argument. The law presumes the disclosure of confidential information where matters are substantially related. And one of the bedrock principles of the attorney-client relationship is the free disclosure of confidences to attorneys for effective representation. During the actual trial of the case, several matters came out with respect to the business operations between Dr. Ramos and Dr. Nadler. And the initial argument was that Dr. Nadler could keep the money because Dr. Ramos had breached the buyout agreement. So the very underlying factual predicate, the reason he didn't have to give the money back, was because Dr. Ramos owed him this $125,000 on the separate buyout agreement that was being litigated in the arbitration proceedings at Jay. So Judge Zamore, I think, classified the attempt to withdraw the affirmative defenses as a transparent attempt to defeat the court's concerns about that conflict. That conflict, simply because they withdrew the affirmative defenses, doesn't vanish, it doesn't disappear, nor does it change the dynamic that we have an attorney who is presumed to have knowledge from a client, which can be used against that client. I don't think you can eliminate that issue simply by withdrawing the affirmative defense.
But the one party connected to this case that Mr. Cummins had never represented was the plaintiff, right?
Correct.
Okay. Correct.
I'm assuming the first question that needed to be asked was whether this kind of conflict could, in fact, be waived. Assuming, for the sake of argument, that it was a conflict that could be waived, it had to be waived by an acknowledgement and written waiver by all the parties involved, including the various juristic entities, in addition to Dr. Ramos and Dr. Nadler. Is that close?
I believe that's accurate, Your Honor, and there was no waiver. Fundamentally, it's very basic. I don't think anyone would have any disagreement that if Mr. Cummins was representing an entity and he also represented the owners of that entity, and one owner wanted to sue the other owner, that there would be a conflict which would require disqualification. That's essentially what we have here, slightly modified, where we have Mr. Cummins represented the Mile High Medical Group entity, and he represented Dr. Nadler with respect to matters relating to that entity, and he represented Dr. Ramos with matters with respect to that entity. Then the dispute arose where Dr. Nadler asserted claims against Dr. Ramos. That was the arbitration. Then related to that, we had this mistaken deposit of the funds into the Mile High Medical Center accounts, and the claims are still the same. It's still Dr. Nadler asserting that he doesn't have to give the money back to Dr. Ramos. And along those lines, central to their defense in the case was that Dr. Ramos needed to be brought in, and Dr. Ramos needed to be deposed because those issues would be central. And it was only after Judge Zamore said that it was not a close call for him that Mr. Cummins should be disqualified that they sought to try to mitigate that conflict or try to eliminate that conflict. But the issues permeated the underlying facts and really went to the court. With respect to the issues with regarding whether or not a hearing was required, the disputed issues of fact were resolved in favor of Attorney Cummins. There were certain undisputed facts as evident from the buyout agreement, which was attached to Mr. Cummins, I believe, motion to reconsider, as well as the records from the Secretary of State. There was no requirement for the trial court to hold an evidentiary hearing to resolve any of those questions of fact. They were all patent from the evidence and from the attachments that were before the court. Mr. Cummins originally argued that there had been no showing that actual facts had been disclosed or that he was privy to any actual confidences such as would require disqualification. Under Colorado law, in the case of Osborne versus District Court, the prevailing rule is that where the attorney-client relationship exists, it will be presumed that confidences were disclosed. To hold otherwise would be required to disclose the very confidences that are trying to be protected. So with respect to the argument that there was no hearing and that there should have been a hearing, the trial court did not need to hold a hearing based upon the facts and information before the court. particularly when faced with controverted issues, it construed those in favor of Attorney Cummins. In our answer brief, we've also requested an award of attorney's fees and costs pursuant to Appellate Rule 39.5. The purpose of the sanction order in the trial court was largely to offset the costs and expenses that had been incurred with respect to litigating the issues of the disqualification of Attorney Cummins. As a result of the filing of this appeal by Attorney Cummins, obviously Premier Care Physical Therapy has incurred significant cost and expense, and we believe that to give effect to the original award from the trial court, as well as based upon the nature of the appeal, which we believe is substantially groundless and frivolous, that we are requesting fees on appeal and that the matter be remanded to the trial court to determine that amount. There's no questions?
Thank you, Mr. Norberg. Ms. Krulich?
Try and hit these points in the 2.5 minutes I have left. First of all, the issue of whether or not the disqualification was appropriate is still a ripe issue for this court, because obviously if the disqualification was not appropriate, then the award of attorney's fees is not appropriate. The withdrawal of the affirmative defenses did not happen after the order of disqualification. The withdrawal of the affirmative defenses happened in October. The order of disqualification, the initial one, was not issued until the end of November. So Mr. Cummins withdrew the affirmative defenses before Judge Zamora issued his initial motion or order of disqualification. In terms of the material misrepresentations, this is just a tempest in a teapot. Mr. Cummins represented that Mile High Medical Group was dissolved, and it in fact was dissolved. There is a dispute about how exactly things happened, but the articles with the Secretary of State show that Mile High Medical Group was dissolved, it was Premier Care Medical Center was formed, that years later, Premier Care Medical Center started to do business under the trade name of Mile High Medical Group, which was resuscitated by Dr. Joe Ramos's wife, Paige Ramos. That's what he was referencing. They attached the buyout agreement that suggested that it was contemplated initially that Mile High Medical Group would simply change into Premier Care Medical Center, but that's not what happened. That's not what happened with the Secretary of State. So it wasn't, first of all, it wasn't a material misrepresentation. That really wasn't a relevant issue in terms of the disqualification and the substantial relatedness. You know, I think the biggest issue here is that, you know, we had, Mr. Cummins had an obligation to oppose this disqualification motion because there was no relatedness to any representation he had previously to the current case. At trial, and we weren't at trial because we were disqualified, but it is my understanding that there was no, I mean, I don't know if the buyout agreement was mentioned, but that was not the defense. Dr. Nadler conceded that he withheld the money, and the only issue was how much he had to pay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Krulich. Thank you again, Mr. Norberg. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.